It's all we can do with the resources we have. Moving forward, barring any future recessions, so we know that won't be forever, but we can do one or two added positions each year is a reasonable, rational expectation. And that's because over time, sales tax revenue does increase. Now, the funny thing is it's increased at a much slower rate than it has in the past, and so we can get into what Amazon's doing to our revenue. So there is more money there, but it's not a huge amount. So the most we can do is have one or two added positions each year. This year we're able to do three because of the 911 tax passing. But you look at that in context, to compare our staffing levels to any city our size with a university our size in the country, and we are lower. We're 30% smaller than other cities our size. So is the university's police department. So many people say, well, you know, you have to add them to be apples to apples. That comparison is the same. If you add them, we're still together 30% smaller than the equivalent in other cities. So that's why that 35 number, 38 number, depends on how many you're trying to get to. But if you get to average, you need at least 30 officers to get there.
Okay. And at the work session over the weekend, there was a work session where city council and some leaders look over this budget. I think I read an article you were quoted as saying, if we were going to try to add new officers now, we would need some new revenue. So yes. Were you talking about anything in particular there when you said new revenue? What could you see as possibilities for this?
Well, my point is you can't get 30 officers in the current budget. You know, the vast majority of our general fund dollars are already committed to public safety. There's not enough money there to fund 30 more officers. So you have to get a new source of revenue in some way, whether that's a property tax or a sales tax or something else. If you don't want to pay more, we can approach it with, we'll just see how many we can squeeze into the budget each year. And there is growth, and so you can do one or two, maybe three a year.
Okay.
So a 10-year plan would get us there, or raise the tax now.
Okay. And so going back to that idea of the property tax, if the city council did decide to move forward with that, what would your stance be on that?
Well, my opinion doesn't matter, of course, because I work for the council, right? They're the decision maker, and they're the public policy body. All my job really becomes is to say, is there money there or not? You know, what are the options if we don't want to raise taxes? What could we do? And so I've done that, and that's the kind of conversation I can have with anyone.
Okay. I mentioned earlier in the show that we curated some questions from some of our past guests, and I wanted to bring one of those questions in here. Brent Gardner is a Columbia real estate agent and chairman of the Downtown Columbia Leadership Council. He asked, do you think there's a connection between Columbia's increase of students living downtown and the recent wave of late-night violence downtown?
No. That's the short answer. The long answer, you know, that's something I've heard, you know, kind of kicked around. And I say no because of the details of the crimes that have happened. If you look at the folks that are involved in those crimes, they're not college students.
Okay. What do you think, too, though, about that is a new reality downtown where we have those college students? What do you think about the clash between, I don't want to say clash, but the fact that that population, in some ways, the lifeblood of this town, is now close to some of this, these violent acts, and that, you know, what does that say for the city going forward?
Sure, good question. You know, the interesting thing is, big picture, nationwide, statistical level, presence of law-abiding folks pushes away crime. So, the best way, for example, to take back a park or a neighborhood is to have everybody go out of their house, you know, and be out there. It's interesting how criminals don't, they want to be very isolated and alone and in the dark. And so having folks living downtown is one of the best things we can do to lower crime rate downtown. Now, that said, it's still a worry, and we still have crime downtown. There's no question. It's a lot lower than people think, which, you know, I can tell you the statistics and tell you that you're half as likely to be a victim of crime in Columbia as you were 10 years ago. It doesn't make you feel better when there's a shooting at 10th and Broadway, right? Mm-hmm. So we have to deal with both how it feels, how we all feel about crime, and then the reality of it. So for us to do that, we really dig in on each individual crime. And I just got to take a moment and really praise the police department, our detectives division, our vice narcotics division. The whole department's done a great job. At this point, all the bad guys from this last summer have been caught and apprehended. So they're doing a great job. And that's because, you know, they dig in and do the hard day-to-day work of the police department.
Sure.
You know, where you go and you get someone's cell phone records and you follow up on every single call and you figure out who they're talking to, what they said. Then you go talk to them. Then you, so these are the kind of methodic things that take quite a while, but they result in good outcomes.
Sure. And I'll go back to when the mayor introduced that proposal for the property tax. He mentioned, I'm not sure why, but he went ahead and spelled out the power structure at the city and pointed out that you are the person that oversees mm-hmm. directly Chief Ken Burton. I wonder, because there's been a lot of discussion about this, CPOA and others have been vocal about their lack of confidence in Chief Ken Burton. I wonder where you are on that. Are you confident in him at this moment?
I'm 100% confident in Chief Burton. He does a great job with an incredible amount of insubordination from CPOA and others. Our system allows for insubordination, unfortunately. You know, you think about other systems like the county government, the sheriff, where 100% of their employees are at will. You better not pull that kind of stuff there, right? And most people wouldn't allow their own businesses to be run the way we must and with our current approach. So, you know, it's unfortunate. For many other reasons, this group has decided to take some tactics that have really never worked in our history in America, but they really believe in it. Kind of old school. You think of these when you think of old school unions, you know, kind of smear campaigns and things like that. So, you know, to dig into it, I talk to everyone, and you know, you reference, you know, kind of the things you hear, mm-hmm. the rumor mill, and I would always follow up. What do you mean? You know, what makes you not have confidence? How is it that this chief is so bad, you know, what you end up with are very petty things. One example, a recent retiree is still extremely mad that we deleted take-home vehicles. He had to buy a car for the first time in his life. So those are the sources of a lot of it. A lot of it, quite honestly, is this chief has done exactly what he's been asked to do, come in and modernize this department. We have a lot of very talented, very dedicated folks, but our processes, our policies were very old-fashioned. So a good example is our property room. This is something that went public last year, I think. The chief came in and did an audit of how we deal with things that we seize at crime scenes and others, and it was incredibly sloppy. And so best practice is much different than our practice was. So the chief changed our way of doing business. That was unpopular with some, and I will say very small number, but they are vocal, those changes. Most officers realize, hey, this is a good change, and we're into it.